welcome podcast listeners to another Happy Public Radio episode. I'm your host for today's show, Phoenix, and I'm really lucky to be joined on the line today by Moxie Marlon Spike. Hi Moxie, could you introduce yourself to the Hacker Public Radio audience, please?
Hey, my name is Moxie Marlon Spike. I work at the Institute for Disruptive Studies, and I guess I'm going to be talking about SFL.
As I say, I'm really chuffed that you've come on to the call. For the guys that maybe haven't heard of you before, one of your projects, the tools that you do is SSL Strip. Could you maybe kind of give us a brief explanation of what SSL Strip is for the HPR audience?
Sure. The concept itself is pretty simple. The idea is basically that SSL is pretty good, but how it's deployed really matters. And on the web, SSL is deployed in this kind of strange way where there's often a bridge between just HTTP and HTTPS. And this bridge is a very vulnerable point. And once you start looking at that, there's all kinds of tricks that you can do to attack that bridge. And so SSL Strip is sort of a proof of concept, and it by default implements sort of the most straightforward attack, which is just preventing the connection from being upgraded from HTTP to HTTPS. The evolution of the way that browsers have gone, a reduction of positive feedback and a stronger introduction of negative feedback helps sort of enhance that attack such that it's actually pretty deadly.
Yeah, I caught your Black Card DC talk over on securitytube.net, and I really like the way that you'd kind of used that bridge similarly for how HTTPS is used, and I think that's really nice. But I like the video. I think I always like seeing the practical demonstrations, and I quite liked when you shown that using SSL Strip, it's actually very hard for people to notice that there might be on a site that's actually had all the SSL pulled out of it, and it's relying on a HTTP connection. You hear this band about a lot, but you get people say that oh, really, it's all about user education and user awareness, and if they're looking for the signs, they'll know that they're not on a secure site. Do you think that that's true, or do you think that really we need to take more ownership for actually, it's maybe a little bit past user awareness?
Yeah. I think there's something else going on there, more than just user awareness. I gave that talk in D.C., and one of the most common reactions was, oh, this is a matter of user education. Users are stupid, and they just don't understand. We need to make them understand that they need to look for these indicators. Like I said, I think that there's something more than that here. So that's sort of like a demonstration. I gave the same talk at Black Hat in Amsterdam, and, 10 minutes before my talk, I just ran SSL Strip on the network for 10 minutes, and I got 50 passwords, and so I made a slide that was just the passwords, no usernames, and so I just put all the passwords in a slide, and I put up the slide, and I said, well, these are your passwords, right? Like, even so-called security professionals are falling victim to this attack, and the idea is basically like, if these people, so-called security professionals, at a place like Black Hat, which is known to have a pretty hostile network, fall victim to this attack, then what hope do 99% of users have, right? So I think there's something else going on here, and it's not just, saying that user education is the problem.
Yeah, I saw... I saw the demonstration that you did on the video, and from here anyway, I thought it was actually very, very, very hard to tell the difference between, the secure. I think you used Gmail as an example in one of your slides, and you showed the secured version and the non-secured. Well, the where the SSL was stripped out of it, and I mean, I found it very hard to actually tell, and I think you kind of it was more about, it seems to be that there's a push towards with browsers for this, negative reinforcement.
Right, totally. A lot of the positive indicators have been toned down, and it varies from browser to browser. But I mean, especially if you look at things like Safari, right? The difference between a secured site in Safari and a straight HTTP site is just is one little tiny blind embossed padlock in the upper right corner that's very small, and that's the only thing that disappears. So yeah, I think most people's experience is to just be browsing along and then continue normally until there's something that appears that says something drastically wrong has happened, And so I think that that's the trend that browsers have been leading people, and it's possible to exploit that trend using attacks like these.
I mean, the other thing that I kind of wanted to talk to you about as well, is I also saw your I also saw the video of your talk in Vegas, and previous listeners to the show will know Chris John Reilly and Frank Braddock actually mentioned your talk. And your talk was New Tricks for Defeating SS was it New Tricks for Defeating SSL, where you discussed was it is it the null prefix attack?
Right, right.
Could you maybe kind of give us a brief description of what that attack is, just for people in the HPR audience that might not have heard about it before?
Right. So this is, this is a different attack. And it uses, so I have two different tools. One is SSL strip, which is, does the stripping of attacking this sort of bridge. And then I have this other tool, SSL sniff, which is designed more to attack the SSL connections directly, whether on the web or anywhere else. And so this tool, the null prefix attacks are for, the idea is basically that SSL certificates are based on a standard called X509, and X509 represents data using ASN1. And so strings in the ASN1 format are represented as Pascal strings, which means that there is a length prefix and then the string itself. And this is in contrast to most SSL implementations, which are written in C, and they use C strings, right? And C strings, you just get a pointer into the first character in your character string. And then whatever function that you're using continues along the string until it encounters a null character. And then this is supposed to indicate that you're at the end of the string. So two different models of representing strings. And so what I found is that you can actually create strings in your certificates that have null characters in them. And this is important because the way that certificate authorities have started to validate identity is through this thing called domain validation. And the idea is basically you submit a certificate signing request to a certificate authority, and they look at the domain that you want the certificate for, and they ignore everything except for the root domain. So I submit a certificate request for foo.thoughtcrime.org, and they ignore everything but thoughtcrime.org. And they do a whois lookup, get my contact information out of the whois database and contact me to verify that I am actually requesting this certificate. So the interesting thing is I can get whatever I want. I can get foo.thoughtcrime.org. I can get verifyneedschildren.thoughtcrime.org. I can get certificate authorities are a total ripoff.thoughtcrime.org. And whatever I submit the request for, they will ignore everything except for thoughtcrime.org and do this whois lookup and contact me. So as long as I control sort of the root domain, I can get whatever I want. And what I found is that this includes things like www.paypal.com, nullcharacter.thoughtcrime.org. So if I get a certificate like that, the certificate authority will ignore everything except for the root domain, thoughtcrime.org, do a whois lookup and contact me, and I can verify that, I do in fact own this domain. But then when I present the certificate to a web browser or an email client or a chat client or a VPN client, anything that uses SSL, it will pull out the name, it will pull out the domain, and it will treat it as a C string, which means that when it goes to compare it to whatever it was actually trying to connect to, so let's say it was trying to connect to PayPal.com, it will do a string compare between PayPal.com and www.paypal.com nullcharacter.background.org. And the null character will terminate the string comparison such that it will think that my certificate actually just says www.paypal.com. And you know, the interesting thing is that it's undetectable, right? So there's no warnings, and furthermore, once you go to inspect the certificate, even then you don't see anything past the null character because even the functions that are displaying the certificate information are, you know, tricked by the null character as well. So it's a nice attack that's pretty undetectable. The one variation was that I also found that, you know, you can get wildcard certificates, right? So like I can get star.thoughtcrime.org. And the deal is that then I get my one certificate and it will match www.thoughtcrime.org, mail.thoughtcrime.org, you know, chat.thoughtcrime.org, whatever I'd like, and I don't need a different certificate for each subdomain. And I found that the Mozilla, the SSL implementation that the Mozilla products use, which is called NSS, and actually a number of other pieces of software also use the same SSL implementation, Pigeon, AIM, Evolution, a few others, that this had a very strange way of validating wildcards, such that I could get a certificate that said star null character dot thoughtcrime.org. And of course, when the implementation was presented with the certificate, it would evaluate to star. And that would match any domain. So you could have this one certificate, star null character dot thoughtcrime.org, and it would match anything that you compared it to. And I called it a universal wildcard certificate. It's sort of like having a CA cert, only it's actually better, because if you have a CA cert, you still have to create and sign the, you know, leaf certificates that you'd like to move. Whereas if you have a universal wildcard cert, you just, you know, present the same thing over and over again, and it matches everything.
So, I mean, you would deploy something, you know, you deploy your wildcard, your universal wildcard cert, you deploy that, say, on a man-in-the-middle attack and on a company network, what you're actually saying is that, you know, PayPal, Gmail, whoever those secure sites they go to, the actual user on the other end, even if they go to view the certificate, will actually be told they're viewing, like, if they're going to PayPal, that they're actually seeing the PayPal certificate. Is that correct? So basically you could pretty much own pretty much anyone's HTTPS sort of, you know, secure stuff on networks then?
Sure, yeah. It plugs right into SSLSniff, which is, you know, this tool that I have. So you can actually just run SSLSniff on a network and you'll just get all of the SSL traffic. And it's not just HTTPS. It's also all the other things that SSL is used for. It's, you know, secure IMAP, secure POP3, you know, secure IRC, SSL VPNs. Really everything that SSL uses, that SSL is used for. And yeah, you just run SSLSniff and you get it all.
I mean, I've watched the video a couple of times. I really loved the talk. I mean, I thought it was fantastically done. I thought it was well presented and very, very interesting. It amazed me, without sounding disrespectful, and that's not what I'm meaning at all, but it seemed to me that it was beautiful in its simplicity, the null prefix attack, that you know, it was almost like you hacked the application process itself rather than the protocol itself. Does that make sense?
Oh, sure. I mean, this is an implementation vulnerability, right? You know, most vulnerabilities that you find are always software problems. You know, it's rare that there are actual protocol vulnerabilities that are exploitable. The thing that I think is interesting is when you manage to find implementation vulnerabilities that span implementations, right? So this is a bug that is a problem with SSL implementations. It's a bug in NSS. But the interesting thing is that almost everybody got it wrong. almost every SSL implementation that exists messes this up. You know, NSS is bad. The whole Microsoft Crypto API is bad. So every application that uses SSL on Microsoft Windows is vulnerable to this. You know, GNU TLS got it wrong. A lot of applications that use OpenSSL got it wrong. So I think that those are the kind of the most interesting things, of not just when you find a bug in a piece of software, but you find a bug that everybody has tripped over. Every single person who's tried to do this has all made the same mistake. I think those are the really interesting implementation vulnerabilities.
I mean, the other thing that I'd also like to touch on as well, it was also in that talk that you mentioned about the OCSP, the online basically the online certificate checking protocol, and how you'd actually overcome that. I mean, would it be possible to get you to kind of like give us a brief description of what OCSP is and actually how you defeated it?
Right. So this is something that's like bordering on a protocol vulnerability. And the deal is that OCSP is the Online Certificate Status Protocol. The idea is that the old mechanisms for revoking certificates are not really working for people anymore, right? It used to be that if you revoked a certificate, it would just get put in the certificate revocation list, and every once in a while you would update your CRLs. But now, you know, the problem is there's so many different certificate authorities, and each has their own CRL, and the lists are getting longer and longer. I mean, they're enormous now. That it's really just sort of a nightmare to manage all of these things. So what people wanted instead was a gateway protocol for verifying certificates on the fly. And that's what OCSP is supposed to be doing, right? The idea is that if you're a web browser or any SSL implementation, but let's just say a web browser sees a certificate for the first time. So, you know, it tries to make a connection to Gmail, and it gets a certificate for, you know, Google.com, and it says, well, I haven't seen this yet. It does a quick request to an OCSP URL embedded in the certificate. So the certificate has inside of it embedded something that says OCSP check, you know, OCSP.bot.com. And so it makes a quick request out to OCSP.bot.com, and it says, hey, is this certificate still okay? And the OCSP provider responds either by saying, yeah, the certificate is fine, or this has been revoked. And so if it's been revoked, then you know, the web browser will pop up a dialogue, or it will refuse to accept the certificate. So the idea is that, like, if for some reason Google's certificate gets compromised, or the certificate authority discovers that this was actually a forgery or something like that, then they can very quickly revoke it, and it will immediately be worthless. So this is something that's of interest to me, right, because it's like, you know, I have all these null prefix certificates. Well, what if somebody revokes them? And so I was looking at OCSP, and what's interesting is that it's not an SSL-based protocol, you know, for sort of obvious reasons, but, you know, you issue this OCSP request, and you get an OCSP response back from the server. And if the response is a successful response, if the response indicates that you know, that the certificate is okay, then it is signed by the OCSP provider. So it includes a signature, which, you know, from our perspective might be difficult to forge. So what we would like to do is send back, you know, what we'd like to do is intercept these requests, just like we're intercepting the SSL connection, form a man-in-the-middle attack, and send back success. But we can't do that very easily because, you know, we would have to include the signature. So it turns out that there's a bunch of other response types that you can send. And there's a class of response types that you can send that don't require any signed data. And because what's interesting is that the signature doesn't actually cover the response type. It only covers some other things. So it turns out that you can actually send a response that is the response type is try later, and you don't have to sign that. So what you do is you send back try later, and a browser essentially treats that as a success. You know, it continues on, and presumably it will try again later the next time it sees a certificate. But so if your certificate has been revoked, then it doesn't get the revocation. So you know, the kind of funny thing was that the response code for try later is the character 3. Actually, you don't have to include any data other than that. So literally, the only thing you respond with is the character 3, like the ASCII 0x33. And that just sort of defeats the whole protocol. So, you know, OCSP is defeated by the number 3, was kind of the joke.
It seems like you've had a heyday with SSL. I mean, what sort of got you into looking at SSL and certs? I mean, what kind of gets you going about that, and why do you want to kind of have a look at it and you know, take it apart and see where it's got flaws in it? What sort of inspires you to do that?
Yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, a lot of my interest in computer security is in the area of secure protocols, designing secure protocols, writing proofs for secure protocols, implementing secure protocols. And so, you know, I've been looking at SSL for a while. You know, I published some other attacks a long time ago. And the thing I like about SSL is just that it's kind of an easy target because it's so universal, right? It's really everywhere, and it's used for other types of things. So if you can find vulnerabilities in SSL or SSL implementations, you end up getting a lot. You know, one mistake can translate into, you know, everybody's top 3 login in the world, you know. So it's kind of a nice thing to look at just because it's so prevalent.
I mean, I'm right in understanding that that Firefox 3.5 and Firefox, I think 3 as well, have patched against the null prefix attack. Is that correct?
Yeah, the Firefox 3.5 and Firefox 3.0.13 include patches for the null prefix vulnerability. You know, they actually parse the strings correctly and treat the null characters as data that should be compared. So those are fixed. I think, yeah, there's a new version of GNU TLS, and I think there's some new, you know, people are slowly rebuilding their applications. And distributing new versions of GNU TLS. Some people have been patching their applications against OpenSSL. And the, you know, strangely, the thing that remains unpatched is the entire Microsoft Crypto API. So basically, anything on Windows is still vulnerable to prefix attack. And that includes not just Internet Explorer and Outlook, but other browsers that run on Windows. So for instance, you know, Chrome on Windows is vulnerable to null prefix attack. Safari on Windows is vulnerable to a null prefix attack. Everything that uses SSL on Windows right now is vulnerable. So that's the big gap left.
I could be wrong about this as well, but I thought I read somewhere as well that the BlackBerry's implementation is also susceptible to the attack as well. I think I read that last week somewhere as well. So there's still quite a number of targets for this attack then.
Yeah, I think the BlackBerry folks released a patch maybe this week, and I think that, you know, we'll see stuff like that for a while. We'll see, you know, random SSL implementations here and there. We'll notice, oh crap, you know, we're vulnerable to this, and start patching their stuff and releasing the code. And yeah, you know, hopefully this stuff will get distributed kind of effectively, but it is a lot of it's a lot to get back out there, you know.
It sounds like it's, you know, there's having to do some serious work to kind of patch this. But is it right to say that the application process itself is still hasn't been looked at then? I mean, that, you know, you can still are you able to use what you did to still get wildcard certs?
Oh, you mean from the certificate authorities? I'd say most of those guys have probably fixed their bugs. Yeah, I think most of those guys will probably not give you certificates with null characters in them anymore.
Well, I mean, it seems that the logical step in sorting this problem out is to stop doing, you know, making sure that they check for null characters with inserts. I mean, were you surprised yourself at when you actually put a little pressure on it, how you know, I imagine there was a lot of research that took place here for you to find the null prefix attack, but you know, were you shocked at maybe how easily you took it apart?
No, I mean, there will always be software vulnerabilities. This is not the last SSL vulnerability. There's more stuff in there. Software will always be insecure. That's just sort of the deal. So yeah, for me, it's not that surprising when you find the implementation vulnerabilities. Finding protocol level vulnerabilities, that's a little bit more shocking. But the implementation stuff, it's just you just gotta assume that it's all bad.
Okay, I'll not pick your brains any more about that because I can just imagine over the past, you know, couple of weeks you've probably had to explain this attack to numbers of people. It must be almost like, you know, coming flowing off your tongue now talking about the null prefix attack. You know, I'm. For anyone that doesn't know you have a site thoughtcrime.org, and I was having a look about today. I've had a look about a few times, but I had it for the first time. I actually had a look at your software section on your site, and it actually surprised me how many tools you've actually got on there. I mean, what are some of your favorite tools that you've got on there?
I mean, yeah, I guess I like it all, right? I just released Knock Knock, which is a port knocker that I wrote, and I like that. I mean, most of the tools on there are things that like I wanted and couldn't find elsewhere, and I think that people have been talking about port knocking for a long time, and I was kind of surprised at how few good port knocking implementations there are. People have been sort of going crazy with this concept, and I feel like really deviating from the original intent behind it. And so I ended up having to write my own port knocking implementation just because what was out there seemed so insufficient. So I'm kind of excited about that. Knock Knock, I think is a pretty solid tool. I use the Tor tunnel stuff a lot for creating a turning any Tor exit node into a one-hop proxy. I think that's pretty useful. Not for situations where you want like heavy levels of anonymity, but perhaps you want some perspective. You want to basically route your traffic through another network segment so you get the perspective of looking at things from a different angle. Or if you just want some very minimal level of anonymity through a one-hop proxy. And then, of course, SSL strip and SSL sniff are, I think, useful for all different types of stuff. And those are probably the tools that I use the most.
So, Moxie, how did you actually get into security? How did you get into this stuff then?
Through the basically like the 90s hacker scene. I don't. It's interesting. I don't know what it was like in Europe, but in the United States, there was this sort of period during the 90s where there was this kind of hacker scene that was, before the immersion of professional like computer security as an industry, right? That there was this kind of scene of people who were interested and into computer security. Not as a business, but as something that they found inspiring and fun. And so I got into computer security through that sort of scene before it turned into this more professional deal.
Okay, I mean, anyone that's seen your site will see that you have lots of side, you know, almost side projects and all of that sort of stuff going on. I thought it was quite interesting to see that you describe yourself as, is it one part sailor, one part hacker, one part pyrotechnician? It amazes me that we've gone from hacking SSL to basically delivering yachts. It seems that you have quite a strange, you know, not strange, but interesting kind of setup going on.
Yeah, I guess I do have some divergent interests. Yeah. So right, I'm really into sailing. I'm part of this thing called the Anarchist Yacht Club. I have a 100-ton Master Mariner's license, and I use that to deliver yachts at times. And I'm into making fireworks too, from scratch. It's, something that's I think is pretty fun that I've been working on with some folks where I live. So yeah, I guess so there's kind of divergent interests, and yeah, they don't overlap that much. I don't, I'm into like the sort of old school sailing techniques. I don't really like combining technology with the ocean, and so yeah, it's kind of a weird tension in my life, but that's the deal.
I also see that you did a hitchhiker's tour as well. That sounds for me in the UK, that sounds like a really scary thing to do, but did you enjoy it or?
Yeah, I mean, I spent a lot of time hitchhiking, riding freight trains, traveling by alternative means. A lot of the sailing that I've done has been fixing up derelict boats and, getting them floating again and sailing them out on the ocean. So, yeah, I spent a lot of time traveling by alternative means. I think hitchhiking used to be something that was, pretty exciting, and I think I learned a lot from riding trains in the same way. So yeah, I've got some stories about strange rides and some miserable moments or whatever. But yeah.
Moxie, another question that I have for you, buddy, is are you speaking at any more conferences this year or in the near future?
Yeah, let's see. I'm going to be this month speaking at the University of Michigan, and let's see, on the 15th, no, the 15th, and then I'm actually going to hack.lu in Luxembourg at the end of October, and I might be going. I'm possibly giving. I have a training called Designing Secure Protocols and Accepting Secure Communication. It's all about basically how to design a secure protocol and using the knowledge of how to design a secure protocol, evaluating secure protocols that already exist. So I'm going to give that training, I think, at DeepSec, that's in Vienna in November, and also at Black Hat in DC again in, I guess it's the end of January and beginning of February. So I think that's pretty much my travel roster.
So for people that want to kind of find out more about what you're up to and the projects that you're working on, do you have a blog that people can follow?
No, I just I post stories on thoughtcrime.org, and yeah, I mean that's probably the best place is, I post new software and some stories up there, and that's probably the best place for and white papers, I guess, or whatever. So yeah,
Yeah, I
it's a
mean,
good place to follow up.
I've been on the site, and I definitely recommend that people go and have a look. It's absolutely awesome. In the interest of not taking up any more of your time, I'll wrap up with the interview. Is there anything in particular that you want to speak about or talk about to the Hacker Public Radio audience?
Oh, geez. No, I think we've covered it. This is just sort of like, I guess, the overview of all this SSL stuff. And if people are interested, they can read the white papers for a little bit more information and check out the software and look at the source and stuff for figuring out how all this stuff really works. And feel free to email me and correspond and stuff like that.
So basically, don't trust SSL.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's don't trust software. I guess that's the real message, right? But it's people have been working on this for a long time, and if you look at projects like OpenSSH, something like OpenSSH has been designed from the ground up for security. Every single line of code that is written on that project is done with security in mind. People are constantly auditing. You have a very paranoid group of people who are writing this, and yet there are still software vulnerabilities that get released. And I think, you know, we have to acknowledge that if that is true, what hope do we have of finding security in all the other products that weren't written with that level of security in mind? The lesson is that software is insecure. It always will be. We need to plan accordingly and take other steps for dealing with it.
Brilliant. Like I say, I mean, you can find Mox's site at thoughtcrime.org, and it's definitely well worth a visit. Moxie, I'd like to thank you for coming onto the line and allowing me to ask you these questions. It's very nice of you, and I hope that the Hacker Public Radio audience will enjoy it. So all that's really left for me to do is thank Moxie and thank the Hacker Public Radio audience for listening. Before I go, if anyone from the Hacker Public Radio audience wants to get involved in podcasting, they can always record an episode on anything that they're interested in. Maybe there's someone what they want to interview, or a project they want to talk about, or a how-to guide or something like that. You can record a show, and if you contact either Klaatu or Enigma at hackerpublicradio.org, they can help to get the show out for you. So once again, thank you all, and I'll catch you the next time on Hacker Public Radio.
Thank you for listening to Hacker Public Radio. HPR is sponsored by Caro.net, so head on over to caro.net for all your hosting needs.